this week in the markets. Gold rallied for the 12th week in a row as senior analysts lined up calling for new record highs. Well, welcome back to GoldSeek.com Radio, everyone. Your host, Chris Waltzek. Just great to be back with you on this August 16th, Season 14, Episode 709 broadcast. It sounds like Wall Street is secretly listening in to GoldSeek.com Radio. Folks are starting to get excited for the first time in years. So it's just a pleasure to welcome back one who never lost his enthusiasm for the metals, GATA.org's Bill Murphy. The NFL player turned leading analyst chimes in on the three-month precious metals rally. He says once silver breaches 21, and it's not that far now, the next leg could send silver sky high, the world's most important industrial precious metal. We discussed the timeless Wall Street adage, be far more concerned by the return of your money than the return on it, and the importance of a financial safety net slash life preserver. And we all know, regular listeners, what sector we think holds the most promise there. Silver, almost fourth week in a row, 90-1 on the gold to silver ratio. We think this offers not only a free lunch for portfolio beta balancing, but you also have the potential for truly explosive gains. Can't see how anyone can argue against at least a 1 to 2x from these levels. And my guest and I think the potential is much higher than that. And why so? Well, the inelastic supply and nearly vertical demand curve of silver could hold the keys to the big rally. Demand for industrial metals remains red hot. Manufacturers only require a tiny amount of silver in most electronics, but the sheer number of electronics worldwide and the necessity of silver just makes it a prime target for cornering. And what if another Warren Buffett-like billionaire, there's 2,000 billionaires plus on the earth, just one could corner the market like Warren Buffett or the Hunt brothers? This is an interesting market, and we'll see what happens. Then Trends Research Institute's Gerald Celente has more good tidings for the precious metals aficionados. His model's calling for a retest of the 1912 high on gold, and 2,000 plus is possible as he's looking for some rough seas in the economy. And we'd like for you to call into the Q&A hotline. Please jot this number down, 641-715-3900. You'll need our extension number, 514049. You can just put this on a post-it pad near your phone, or just plug it right into the phone, 641-715-3900, followed by our extension number, our voice box number, 514049. You can leave your questions and comments. We appreciate your feedback. And Robert Ian wraps up the show with his latest must-hear report. And if you've been looking for the Signal Hunters and Ancient Artifacts Preservation Society videos, we've decided to comb through these to make sure we are putting out the best content for you. Taken some of them down, and we're back to reposting a few daily and want to make sure. And we're not giving away any proprietary information. A lot of interesting findings this week. So I hope you'll bookmark my blog spot, Ancient Artifacts Preservation Society, or signalhunters.net, to get all the material right at your desktop. GoldSeek.com Radio begins now with a market weather recap. Visibility virtually unlimited from horizon to horizon over the precious metals sector for the 12th week running as investors continued to pour funds following calls from a legion of experts for up to $2,000 gold. At Friday's closing bell, the yellow metal remained at lofty levels, finishing higher by about $15, 1% at $15.24 an ounce. Silver, though, blasted another 20 cents higher, $17.12 by Friday's close, another record weekly close. And then palladium added 22, a 1.5%, around 1440. Platinum, though, was off 12 at about 1.4%, finishing at 850. Keep an eye on this sector. We have a very interesting way to play platinum, which I think could play catch-up to the tune of half an X to an X in the years coming forward. We have the ticker symbol and write-up in this week's Alpha Stocks newsletter. Could be a big rocket ship and a good way to boost the portfolio. The top story driving the markets, investors clamored to buy the precious metals on news of several, not just one or two, senior investment analysts calling for record all-time highs in the metal amid ratcheting geopolitical uncertainty and global trade skirmishes. Way back in August 2011, 8 years ago, gold posted a high of 1918, according to the chief executive officer of the private merchant bank Forbes. He thinks gold could top 2000 by year end on dangerous inflation concerns. Joining the chorus for gold to soar to 1800 or even 2000, a top gold newsletter writer noted the Fed's quantitative easing and large scale asset purchases of toxic debt could help stimulate the economy and increase liquidity, supportive for gold. Next up at bat, the vice president at a precious metals retailer said we could also see 1800 to 2000 gold. It's inevitable. Then the fourth analyst to chime in and agree, commodity strategist at TD Securities, gold is on its way higher for the time being. He could see a case for $2,000 gold. Another analyst from Reuters News noted their forecast as high as 2,000. In a related news report, Reuters this week noted the largest gold producer importer, China, brought in about 1,500 metric tons of gold, about one-third of the total supply. U.S. officials said no more tariffs on China for the time being, and central banks are likely to continue their policy of easing. That makes gold even more attractive. Bottom line on the sector. After announcing the new gold bull market several months ago, it's very reassuring to see five or more top analysts decide to share their similar opinions with us. Plus, by now, most investors recognize the supportive rate cutting cycle underway and the inflationary implications. Nervous stock market investors also see an opportunity to boost the bottom line with underpriced precious metals, a theme that could persist for some time. The gold-to-silver ratio ran back up to 90 again for about the third week in a row after touching 96 2 months ago, a treasure chest of nearly 100 silver coins. I wouldn't miss out on that opportunity. Moving on to a Wall Street report, mostly cloudy skies hovered over the New York Stock Exchange for the third week running on expectations of slower domestic output. By Friday's closing bell on Wall Street, the Dow was off 400, 1.5%, 25,886. Meanwhile, the S&P 500 finished at 2888, off 30, while the NASDAQ was down 63 at 7896. In related news, CNBC's Mad Money, Jim Cramer told viewers they should consider buying shares of Alcon, ticker ALC. I like it as well. The eye care company produces contact lens solutions for surgical equipment. Cramer likes it because of the opportunity to serve the baby boomers, a rising global middle class, and a host of innovations they have underway. For his executive decision segment number one, he sat down with Jim Fish, the president and CEO of Waste Management, ticker WM. That's a stock that's been up 30%. I agree with Jim Cramer. In his second executive decision segment, Cramer sat down with Susan Salka, president and CEO of AMN Healthcare, ticker AMN, a healthcare staffing company, posted top earnings, beating estimates. And in his lightning round, he mentioned two companies I like, Taiwan Semiconductor, ticker TSM, and Marvel Technology, ticker MRVL. Just technical analysis. U.S. shares, bottom line. Well, the fear to greed index continues to show extremely fearful conditions, suggesting that the herd is getting a bit nervous and the smart money might be using this as an opportunity to accumulate shares at discounts. Given the accommodative stance of the Fed and their colleagues, more robust economic conditions seems likely, and this, of course, increases the potential for the recent breakout, I think eventually, to run to nominal record highs, 10,000 NASDAQ, 4,000 S&P, 30,000 plus on the Dow. Remember where you heard it first. More Gold Seek after this.
Thanks for choosing GoldSeek.com radio as a trusted business and investing news source.
It's just great to have the trends researcher back with us today with his forecast. Welcome back, Gerald Celente.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Chris.
It's great to have you. And, you know, the trends report has been calling for a breakout in gold. We did get that recently. And U.S. equities now, after reaching an all-time record zenith, 120-year on the Dow, you know, we're now pulling back a little bit on average.
Well, on June 6th, we issued a trend alert to our subscribers that it was the beginning of the gold bull run, and gold then was $1,332 an ounce. We made that forecast because it had broken over the $1,325 mark and was steady over it. So we said, okay, this is the beginning. The next breakout point has to be $1,385. When it breaks past that, the next shot is $1,450. Now, I've been saying the $1,450 and $1,385 now for about 6 years, you know, that this is what had to happen, had to go over $1,450 and solidly over that. Once it went over that, it was going to spike to a 2,000. And now as we speak, gold is around $1,500 an ounce. Our downside risk we see for gold is about $1,390. Very small. Gold has now reestablished itself as the ultimate safe haven asset. What you're looking at around the world are central banks lowering interest rates to record lows, coming up with more and more schemes to pump monetary methadone into the system to whatever kind of lines they want to use, any kind of schemes, quantitative easing, you know, lower reserve ratio requirements of banks, whatever they can make up, they're going to do. So what they're doing, in fact, is devaluing their currencies around the world. And by the way, the talk about China devaluing its currency purposely, the yuan, that's not, we don't see it like that at all. It wasn't a purposeful downgrade. It's downgrading because its economy is downgrading. And they're sitting on over $40 trillion worth of debt, and they're doing everything they can to artificially prop up their slumping economy. So what we're looking at is it's not only the beginning of the gold bull run, this is also the beginning of the greatest depression. We're going to witness a downturn that we've never seen before in modern history.
And, you know, you really seem to be reflecting the comments, commentary, narratives, stories, really everything we're hearing in the blogosphere, but right here on Gold Seek Radio. You may have, I'm sure you read, that the Bank of International Settlements sent a telegraph, if you will, to all the central banks. You should accept gold, the yellow metal, that barbarous relic, in lieu of reserves. I mean, this is just as good as cash. So they bumped it up a notch. And so now suddenly central banks said, hey, we can have the stuff we like instead of holding U.S. dollars. So it seems like that bodes extremely well for, of course, for precious metals investors, and maybe not so well for the U.S. dollar. What else do you see going on here?
Well, the U.S. dollar is staying strong because the other ones are all so weak. I mean, you're seeing the British pound going way down. You're seeing, again, you just saw within the last week, the Bank of India lowering interest rates four straight times, lowering it. The Bank of New Zealand, central bank, lowered rates 50 basis points, lowest they've ever had. Same thing in Australia. They're in low in history. You're looking at Europe. They're in negative interest rates. You're looking at 30-year German bonds with negative interest rates, negative yields. I mean, you know, I like you. You're a great guy, Chris. You know, I got a 10-year Japanese bond for you, a French bond for you, a bond from the Netherlands. They're all going to pay you negative yields. So in 10 years, when you turn them in, you're going to get less money than what you bought it for. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. So people that are looking to invest, they're going into these, you're looking at $15 trillion already in negative yield purchases of bonds. So what they're doing is they're going into gold. And you mentioned, you know, the central banks accepting gold as a reserve currency. Well, guess what? You well know, and so do listeners of GoldSeek, that central banks bought more gold last year than they have in 50 years, and they're keeping it going this year. So they know it's coming down. We are looking at the greatest depression. We are now in a stage one recession. People feel it in their pocketbooks, and they feel it in their bones. So not only are they depressed in terms of the money that they have and the debt that they owe, I mean, they're depressed on all of these antidepressant drugs. You know, it's one after another. And so it's depressed in the heart, and it's depressed in the pocketbook.
You know, Gerald Celente, you dedicated probably the better part of 12 years of your valuable time just helping our listeners here and helping the show. Well, not just on the markets, but get back to whole foods. You need locally grown nutrition, dense phytonutrients in our foods. We need to bump up the raw content to at least 50%, preferably much higher, in every meal. Cooked foods act as an invading force, the immune system. But back onto the markets. So if gold is likely going to establish a new uptrend, U.S. equities could suffer. And it looks like you might expect GDP to be slowing because, I mean, the central banks certainly agree with you. 19 cuts in just the past few months from our central banks around the world. And now nearly 100% lock on next month's rate cut again by the Federal Reserve. So Jerome Powell sees something. He agrees with Gerald Celente.
Well, they know it's bad. What they're looking at is the reality that they don't have much more monetary methadone to pump into the addicted bull. When the Fed in the United States, when a recession was coming on, they were lowering interest rates 5%. We only have another 2% down to go. They only brought it up to what? The overnight rate was 2.25 to 2.50. Now it's 2 to 2.25. They're going to try to do more, quote, quantitative easing, BS line they've made up. According to the Levy Institute, the Federal Reserve pumped in $29 trillion worth of money into the economy following the panic of 08.
I mean, what we've seen is their balance sheet go up approximately $3 billion, give or take, you know, $100 billion. When you start talking about $29
trillion. $29 trillion, according to the Levy Institute. That's from Bard College. They put out the report. It hardly made it, got any coverage at all. And Bloomberg estimated $9 trillion. They were $20 trillion off. So that's what I'm saying. They don't have the juice anymore. In person, these are addicts. They call them hedge funds, investors. They're gamblers. They're addicts. And that's all they're doing, because that's why when I say people feel in their pocketbook, all that $29 trillion went to the 1%. And I'm not making that up. The numbers are there. Everybody who listens to your show knows that. And this is global. So we're looking at the greatest depression. Here, history is repeating itself. Trade wars, currency wars, depression, world war.
I mean, we've talked about this on the show. When trade barriers go up, goods and services and products flow starts to slow. Let's get back, though, to this amazing statistic you brought up, you know, because the more I try to wrap my mind around, even if you were off $10 trillion, meaning Bard College and the Levy Institute, even if they were off by several trillion either way, but it would certainly seem as though I think you could make a pretty fair extrapolation or deduction that they have really kicked monetary profligacy into overdrive. That is de facto runaway inflation. And so it sounds like they're able somehow to contain that genie, that extra $25 trillion. So what they've really done here, and they bought up the toxic debt that our institutions were holding on their balance sheets, particularly the top five or six money lending banks around the world. This was probably tied mostly to those toxic loans, right? MBSs, collateralized debt obligations, and related Alt-A's and ninja loans.
Yeah. That's a perfect sense. It's not that they're hiding it. They're losing it. They're building up bigger debt. You mentioned collateralized debt obligations. It's now you have collateralized loan obligations. So corporations are doing the same thing now that used to do to homeowners. So the collateralized loan obligations, you're looking at with debt levels probably now at about $270 trillion globally. The last reports were $250 trillion, but that was over a year and a half ago. The debt bubble is ready to explode. So they're going to keep pumping more cheap dough into the system. The only reason the dollar is strong again is because the other currencies are so weak. And that's why the dollar is being held up. Where are you going to go? You're going to go to China? You're going to go to Europe? I mean, look what's going on with the euro, how it keeps going down. And another important thing to watch is copper prices. Copper prices keep going down. And as we call it, it's Dr. Copper, you call this in the economic field, because copper is used from everything from high tech to heavy industry. And now demand is going down. Same thing with oil. You know, you're looking at oil prices for Brent crude, you know, about $58 a barrel. In Saudi Arabia, they need oil at $100 a barrel for their economy to just break even. And we saw also oil tanking. In the last couple of days, it's pushed back a little bit. So it's demand. It's supply and demand. Demand is down. There's a global slowdown going on. Name the country, there's a slowdown going on. You're even looking at, even with these low interest rates, you're not seeing the housing market booming in this country. It's starting to slow down. And you look at the numbers, it shows it, because people can't afford to buy homes at the prices that they're at, and their wages are barely growing. Median household income is below 1999 levels.
But the implications of what you've outlined here for us, when you start talking about $270 trillion, we've had Dr. Lawrence Kotlikoff here, a great friend of the show like yourself. He echoes everything you're saying. 240, I think, was his last number, $240 trillion in total debt when you include all the obligations. The patient is just being resuscitated, and now it's on life support, the economic patient.
It's an addicted patient, economic patient. That's the important element of this. It's never been healthy. It's addicted by cheap money.
They let the genie out of the bottle, you know, in 1913. It just went into high gear, didn't it, around 71 with this closing of the gold window. Joe Sante, as we bring all the runners across home plate, let people know you're watching, what you're concerned about, what you see in 2020.
What we're worried about a lot is the crisis going on in the Straits of Hormuz. And the United States ramping up action against Iran, backed by Saudi Arabia and Israel. Matter of fact, now Iran is warning Israel against aiding the U.S. mission in the Straits of Hormuz, which the United Kingdom climbed on board as well. The rest of Europe wouldn't. That's one of them. And what the United States is doing to Venezuela with these sanctions is nothing more than economic warfare. So you're going to have floods of people leaving countries as this greatest depression, and then amplified by the ramping up of wars. And again, it's all over the world. You look what's going on in Algeria, Sudan. And again, we write about all this in the Trends Journal. If you tune into the news, you find out what happened. If you subscribe to the Trends Journal, you find out what's going to happen. It's tomorrow's news today. It's history before it happens. So as we're looking at tomorrow's news today, the greatest threats to not only the global economy, but to the beginning of World War III, is if the United States, Israel, and Saudi Arabia ramp this action up against Iran. Iran is not Libya. It's not Syria. It's not Iraq. The reason why Trump did not retaliate after Iran shot down that sophisticated drone was it cost over $100 million to $200 million. This isn't one of these little toys. Is because if the United States retaliated and bombed into Iran, it would have been Pearl Harbor and the Straits of Hormuz. And the American government knows that. You know, you can name all the wars they brought us to since the beginning of recorded history. We have the website Occupy Peace, because this country will never prosper in a state of war. And the only thing that's going to bring this economy back, in my belief, is peace. And to bring home all the troops, close the bases overseas, secure the homeland, put the troops to work rebuilding our third world infrastructure, force Congress to vote to go to war, which they have not done since World War II, in violation of the Constitution, and have a referendum on each state ballot where we the people will tell them how to vote. They're public servants. They should follow our orders because we're the ones that pay for the war with our money and our lives. That's what Occupy Peace is, and the more people that can help us, the more we can do.
We need you guys and gals here.
Tell people just a little bit more about how they can contact your Trends Report.
TrendsJournal.com, TrendsJournal.com, only magazine in the world where you will read history before it happens. Of course, we have broadcasts as well. And money-back guarantee. It's only $129 a year. And if you can't afford that, we'll give it to you at a price that you can. We want people to thrive and survive these times. Thank you, and thank you for all that you do.
The blockchain revolution is transforming the global arena, disrupting every industry in its path. GoldSeek.com is excited to introduce an off-the-chain opportunity in digital gold and silver from our friends at Apmex and Sprott.com. One Gold holds physical gold and silver medals at the Royal Canadian Mint, the first online marketplace to offer secure and convenient buying, selling, and redemption of digital precious metals. One Gold uses Vault Chain, a secure, immutable blockchain ledger developed by TradeWind Markets, the leading innovator in digital precious metals, distributed ledger, and blockchain technology. Vault Chain. Gold and silver are 100% redeemable through One Gold for physical precious metals delivered to customers' doors in any size at competitive prices and low transaction storage costs. As a special offer and for a limited time only, One Gold is offering gold and silver at spot price with no additional premium. OneGold.com is secure and accessible 24/7 on any device, offering convenient purchases and sales of precious metals. Easy recurring transactions make passive saving and gold dollar cost averaging as easy as a single mouse click. Vault Chain offers the best tier pricing on AppMex products, setting the industry standard as a fully backed physical asset with easy redemption in coins, rounds, or bars, offering clients peace of mind and full transparency. Don't get left behind. Remember to bookmark OneGold.com for the safest and most convenient digital precious metals today. Remember, OneGold.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Shopping for fine jewelry just got easier. GoldSeek.com has identified the most successful jewelry brand to launch in recent times. Many Jewelry is rewriting the way consumers buy fine jewelry. Integrity Craftsmanship, the only company to sell 24-karat gold and platinum jewelry, avoiding confusing alloys and gems, a true precious metals investment. Many Jewelry's disruptive business model embraces Franco-American craftsmanship and direct-to-consumer economics, rapidly disrupting the $20 billion monopoly, just like Amazon and Uber. The sky is the limit with $1 billion of jewelry purchases daily for loved ones and those special occasions. Many Jewelry is an innovator positioned to capture market share with annual sales growth in the industry topping $30 billion by 2021. Many Jewelry coined the term investment jewelry, pricing by the gram, transparently disclosing its profit margins, a truer investment in pure gold or platinum. Similar to real estate, even artwork, Many Jewelry has a weighted value easily calculated, ensuring value wealth as a long-term investment. With sales in 60 countries around the globe, 20,000 orders already, don't miss out on the explosive growth potential. Many Jewelry trades under the symbols MENE on the Toronto Exchange and in the US MENEF. Remember to sign up to Many's Shareholder Club to receive shareholder news, updates, and special discount codes for jewelry purchases. Remember, Many Jewelry.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
It's just a pleasure to welcome back Bill Murphy from the Gold Antitrust Association. They're a watch group and hard on the heels, you might say, of the gold cartel. Welcome back, Bill Murphy.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
For how many years have we been scratching our heads, you know, pounding the table, things need to get better, and now over the past 12 weeks, this rate cut cycle caught a lot of investors off guard around the world. That's inflationary. Well, where should I allocate funds if the global economy is slowing down? Well, gold, silver have been in bargain sale prices for years. Tell us more.
Well, the entire gold market has changed, Chris. The gold cartel, as I call it, is losing control of what they've been doing for 6 years. They had gold in the cage. And as you mentioned, 12 weeks ago, they started to move, and it's been on the move to the upside ever since. Every time the gold cartel attacks, the buyers are there ready and ready and come right back and take it back off. It's trading differently than it's ever traded in my lifetime, in my opinion. And I think it's extraordinary, and I think the surprise is going to be how fast gold goes up. It's a very exciting time. And
you know, if we look at the way the market has moved sharply higher, it's a page torn right out of the La Metropole playbook. Folks are just going to be stymied by how quickly this thing moves. And good news caught the sellers off guard. And now the public may be starting to slowly regain interest.
It's incredible how there's interest all over the world, but still here in the United States, it's very subdued.
Earning income in more affluent areas becomes more and more challenging. I think you'd agree. Over the past 2-3 decades, just maintaining the standard of living in a highly inflationary environment, plus, you know, we have record demand for real estate and things like that, it makes the cost of living relative to China, Russia, India, Africa. So people are looking for ways to boost that bottom line quickly. So what they're looking at, I think, and have been thinking about, are high-flying shares. But, you know, they come down as quickly as they go up. Precious metals, they hold their value. What do you see going forward here? Do you really into the rate cutting cycle? You think they mostly follow rates. So what's the main thing on your radar screen?
Rates were not too much different 3 years ago. It didn't mean a thing for gold. Of course, now they made new lows, and you've got the historic low in the 30-year bond and the inverted yield curve and all that stuff. But the real key here, honestly, in my opinion, is that the gold cartel has run out of enough physical gold to meet soaring demand, and they had this gold all these years, and the game's over. And people don't realize, if I might say, how artificially low the gold and silver prices have been. And now finally, after the gold making the move in the last couple of weeks, silver's beginning to catch fire. And there's an incredible battle right now at 1520 gold, which is very clear, and 1720 silver. It's really something to watch. These are key critical levels for both. And I think once they're cleared, look, if silver can get through 1750, it's gonzo, in my opinion. At 21 is the real key, as I've told you many times or mentioned to you many times. The gold market is just people want in, as you mentioned it, negative, and they're going to have to, you know, step on the gas again to revive things. There's certainly the sinking rates are saying things aren't so good. So it's a very exciting time, and again, the United States gold was so bad for so long and other assets were rising so much, people just gave up on it. And that all has to be rekindled, and it will.
You know, I think another interesting component here, you know, the BIS announced that they were changing the reserve requirements. Now, I know I've mentioned this on the show a lot lately, but I think it's important also to note that as the big central banks and the Bank of International Settlements and all the huge deep pockets, you know, make these announcements and start to make these fundamental shifts in the way they view precious metals more as almost a liquid currency, they're sending a text message, an SMS message directly to portfolio managers and pension fund managers and all these other folks. And that sort of, as you pointed out, I think correctly, slowly works its way through the mainstream, you know, that wait a minute, we forgot the key component to a safe, solid portfolio, and it's selling at bargain prices. Silver is still over 80, 85 to 1 on the gold to silver ratio. What a bargain there. Let's talk about AG. I mean, this is undoubtedly most important, I think, an industrial precious metal, as long as we don't include copper. You know, palladium only has, I think, a handful of uses. Silver has tens of thousands of uses. And the irony of it is it's inelastic demand, right? Because not only do you have a relatively inelastic supply, but you have a nearly vertical demand curve. When things really get tight in that market, meaning one Warren Buffett, 85 to 1 on the gold to silver ratio, that might look nice in my $1 billion portfolio. Tell us more about silver.
I think 85 would look good. No, I think it's 88. You're absolutely right, and my opinion, it's just an opinion, has been that gold, the physical market, was drying up on the bad guys, and it would take off, and that's exactly what's happened, and that eventually silver is going to follow, because there isn't that tightness yet, but all of a sudden, as you're talking about, people are going to scramble to get it, and the industrial users are going to buy it up because they want to make sure they got it at a decent price, and silver's going to go ballistic. I mean, it ought to be about 25 or 26 right now instead of this pitiful 17-20, and it's coming, and it's probably going to happen very fast. There's no market like silver, as you well know, that moves higher faster when it's ready to go, and J.P. Morgan has had it under total control for 8 years, and that is going to end. I don't know how they're going to play that out. I keep asking people, what do you think J.P. Morgan's going to do? And nobody really has an answer. You know, do they have the physical silver? Are they going to cover? Are they going to betray their other colleagues? Because the silver open interest is still sky high. It's 100,000 contracts more than it was when silver went to 50. So it's a very exciting time, and it's I think we're getting very close to having commercial signal failures in both gold and silver, in which the commercials have to surrender. And it's very exciting.
Can we talk a little bit more about that? GoldSeek has just some of the greatest folks in the industry. They really contribute their time to us to help build this show and to educate our listeners. You'd probably agree that the gold crowd is bifurcated. Okay, on the one side, you have Gatta, Chris Powell, Bill Murphy's, and many, many others, Chris Martinson, and so many of the great folks who have sided with Gatta.org. There's something just doesn't smell right in the state of precious metals. There's just too much manipulation and scheming that one of our major money lending banks, which will remain nameless, and they are controlling silver, especially behind the scenes. Can you give us a back of the envelope, easy to digest, just synopsis, overview? If you were asked to speak, keynote speaker, what you think is going on there?
Well, it's probably something I would have said 20 years ago, honestly, Chris, in the sense of the gold cartel is the U.S. government, the Fed, and the Treasury, and you've got the BIS, other central banks, bullion banks, to manipulate the gold price. And they've had different strategies over the years, and was in terms of a J.P. Morgan, for example, which I mentioned, came in to rig the silver price all these years, and that's what they've done. And this is, as I mentioned earlier, this is in a process of finally changing after a total drought. And it's something that most people don't want to get into. They're afraid of the money and power behind this, what's going on. The press won't touch it with a 10-foot pole in general. And it's going to be one of the biggest scandals of all time, because when gold and silver explode, like I think they will, people are going to want to have answers. How can this have happened? Why are gold and silver doing this? And Gatta can explain it. And it's going to be it is about time after what we've endured these past years because of the bad guys. There's no reason for the gold and silver to be at these pitifully low prices. As I mentioned maybe before, gold's made highs in 73 countries, all-time highs. And here you've got silver at 17. I mean, are you kidding me? It's just awful, and it's changing, and that's the good news, and it's going to be very exciting.
You know, I mean, yes, relative to where it should be, had every opportunity, Bill Murphy, to slam these markets as they, remember, they hovered for almost a month near break even after the big first leg. And when you see it hold and then break out again, as we did last week, that's got all the hallmarks. Anybody who's watched the tape, the financial world, like any industry, but I think maybe more so than others, is very much an insider clique. You know, you don't go against the prevailing tide without, you know, losing some of the network perks that you're used to receiving in any industry. And I think it's clear the general idea was stay away from gold and silver. And I just want to wrap up today's discussion maybe with that idea that now that they've put the signal out there that, hey, you know what? We're changing our minds on gold and silver. It's time to start picking it up. That's a really important sea change that I hope everyone else wakes up to now.
Quite close attention to what's going on here and how different, as you're mentioning, that the trading has become. I mean, it's like nothing I've ever seen before. And every time they attack gold and silver, it comes right back. And this is totally different. And when you get guys like my old friend Ray Dalio and Paul Tudor Jones talking about gold, it's attracting a lot of attention for the right reason. These guys are very smart and make fortunes. It's all coming together. And as you mentioned, it's been a slug for a long time now. And it's going to be very exciting. And the U.S. general public is still not not there. I mean, there's no premiums in gold and silver right now. I mean, there's more sellers among the public than buyers. It's extraordinary. And this is a setup for an explosion, and that's what I see coming.
What do you say, though, about people who are concerned that if the stock market continues its upward trajectory, that that could at least put off the explosion that you're referring to?
Gold's made its move without the dollar doing anything, and stock market really is not that far from all-time highs. It's had a rough day yesterday, but, I mean, it's still, you know, way up there. I mean, the real key is the gold cartel is running out of physical supply to do what they've done for 6 to 8 years. That's the key. And that's what, if I might suggest, people need to understand.
You spoke in front of Congress, did you not?
But we were down there, and I met with the old Speaker Hastert and Ron Paul and some other people, went to the different departments in Congress. We didn't speak publicly, but we've been there 3 or 4 or 5 times, and I remember going to see Bart Shilton, who unfortunately was a great guy. He died, many people know, and he was a CFTC guy, and we made a big effort to get to Washington and, you know, give them our 2 cents about what's going on, but you realize that the power behind all of them is just too much for any of them to deal with.
Exactly. Yeah, no, Ron Paul, just the best. Graciously, you know, giving us time for the show here as well, a recent guest on the show. All right, Bill Murphy at La Metropole Cafe, Gata.org. You've got to bookmark both sites. All right, Bill Murphy, Gata.org and La Metropole Cafe. Maybe just a quick overview of the services you provide.
Well, I try, you know, I do write about the gold and silver markets every day and put financial news in my commentary, and I have some other people that contribute, like James McShirley does a fantastic job. He probably knows more about futures than anybody out there. And Chris does a great job with Gata.org and is on top of the situation, too, and gets the Gata message out there to whoever he can. And we're fighting the good fight. One day it's going to be a big deal, probably when the gold and silver markets blow up. But it's an exciting time.
You've certainly kept the lights on, you know, with interest in this, in the area. And I'd also just give a quick hat tip to your colleague. We appreciate all you all do. All right, Bill Murphy, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chris. Anytime.
The blockchain revolution is transforming the global arena, disrupting every industry in its path. GoldSeek.com is excited to introduce an off-the-chain opportunity in digital gold and silver from our friends at Atmex and Sprott.com. One Gold holds physical gold and silver metals at the Royal Canadian Mint, the first online marketplace to offer secure and convenient buying, selling, and redemption of digital precious metals. One Gold uses Vault Chain, a secure, immutable blockchain ledger developed by TradeWind Markets, the leading innovator in digital precious metals, distributed ledger, and blockchain technology. Vault Chain. Gold and silver are 100% redeemable through One Gold for physical precious metals delivered to customers' doors in any size at competitive prices and low transaction storage costs. As a special offer and for a limited time only, One Gold is offering gold and silver at spot price with no additional premiums. OneGold.com is secure and accessible 24/7 on any device, offering convenient purchases and sales of precious metals. Easy recurring transactions make passive saving and gold dollar cost averaging as easy as a single mouse click. Vault Chain offers the best tier pricing on AppMex products, setting the industry standard as a fully backed physical asset with easy redemption in coins, rounds, or bars, offering clients peace of mind and full transparency. Don't get left behind. Remember to bookmark OneGold.com for the safest and most convenient digital precious metals today. Remember, One Gold.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Shopping for fine jewelry just got easier. GoldSeek.com has identified the most successful jewelry brand to launch in recent times. Many Jewelry is rewriting the way consumers buy fine jewelry. Integrity, craftsmanship, the only company to sell 24-karat gold and platinum jewelry, avoiding confusing alloys and gems, a true precious metals investment. Many Jewelry's disruptive business model embraces Franco-American craftsmanship and direct-to-consumer economics, rapidly disrupting the $20 billion monopoly just like Amazon and Uber. The sky is the limit with $1 billion of jewelry purchases daily for loved ones and those special occasions. Mini Jewelry is an innovator positioned to capture market share with annual sales growth in the industry topping $30 billion by 2021. Mini Jewelry coined the term investment jewelry, pricing by the gram, transparently disclosing its profit margins, a truer investment in pure gold or platinum. Similar to real estate, even artwork, Mini Jewelry has a weighted value easily calculated, ensuring value wealth as a long-term investment. With sales in 60 countries around the globe, 20,000 orders already, don't miss out on the explosive growth potential. Mini Jewelry trades under the symbols MENE on the Toronto Exchange and in the U.S. MENEF. Remember to sign up to Mini's Shareholder Club to receive shareholder news, updates, and special discount codes for jewelry purchases. Remember, Mini Jewelry.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
It's a pleasure to welcome Harry Estend, Jr., head of an economic research and forecasting company. Welcome back.
Nice to be back, Chris.
Wanted to jump right into this situation in Puerto Rico. You're having trouble with electricity.
Great. It's a pleasure to welcome back Harry Estend, Jr. to the show.
Nice to be back, Chris.
You know, a lot has happened since we've had you on the show. Big sea change in rates by the Federal Reserve, suddenly looking a bit more dovish while their colleagues in the EU and other central bankers are more hawkish. What are the implications for the markets?
The U.S. has been the only country making new highs in major indices in late 2018. And as we move into 2019, I see kind of like the perfect combo, partly globally, but more so for the U.S., where growth is slowed enough globally for the Fed to back off, as you just said, and then stop raising rates and slow down and selling off its bond stash, which you know, the markets love. You know, the China trade deal is supposed to come any day now, so the markets are holding up for that. So we had a big correction late last year, but one of the things I do, Chris, because, I mean, I've really studied bubbles in the last 10 years because it's really become the theme. We're in the greatest bubble in history, extended by massive money printing. We're up to now $16 trillion of money printing by all the central banks. And then on top of that, $1.5 trillion of tax cuts from Trump in the U.S. only. Again, we're still going stronger in the stock markets and our economy's holding up a little better than Europe and China and stuff. I see this bubble going up. I think we're going to see this bubble last until late this year, and the final phase should be the strongest. I mean, bubbles go out with a bang, not a whimper. So I'm looking at the NASDAQ by the end of this year, very early next year, could be as high as 10,000, the Dow as high as 33,000, and then this thing blows. I mean, because friends are weakening. Real estate is weakening. I'm on my third trip to Australia in a little over a year because their real estate market's cracking, and it's been the most stellar real estate market in the developed world outside of China. So this is happening. You can't keep a bubble going forever. But everything is still favoring the bubble here, and this bounce back from late December says to me, you know, we'd have to see new highs by the summer, but I think you are going to see new highs, and then I think it's going to go at least till the fall, maybe early next year at the latest. So I think we got one more big bubble, and so, you know, I've been bubble fighter, but I'm like, ever since Trump got elected and was saying we're going to cut taxes, I'm like, you can't fight that. Better, that'd be better than QE for this.
You talk about bubbles, and I'm glad you brought up, you know, a decade, because very few people in the mainstream have really woken up to is how money printing you referred to, how that's changed. It used to be a printing press, you know, we had coinage, then we moved to paper. Let's call that derivative 1.0. Then we went from that derivative 1.0 to the Greenspan era, where you suddenly have this sort of digital behind the scenes markets opening up. Then we go to maybe 3 or 4.0 with credit default swaps, you know, mortgage-backed securities, things of that nature, options, derivatives on futures. I mean, it seems to me that we're reaching a crescendo of liquidity. Add in the blockchain. So give us an idea of how this crack-up boom might wrap up. I mean, is it going to be the epic blow-off that folks are looking for, or might it just end in a whimper?
Yeah, that's what I see, epic blow-off. The first shot we had of that after Trump got elected, in late 2016, when we just said, look, you got to be bullish here. You know, we're in that final stage.
and it's hard to tell. That can last years. Now, here we are with all this happening, and it's still favorable for the bubbles. And crypto, I mean, in the tech bubble in the 90s, that's what I call a real bubble, when the fundamentals were great, internet moving mainstream, big technology explosion, baby boomers in their strongest years of spending, even though they weren't going to peak until 2007. That was a real bubble exaggerated by strong fundamental trends. This is happening. This bubble's happening with weakening demographic trends, the worst growth. Here's a great statistic, Chris, and we haven't even hit the peak of the crisis yet and the worst of what I see in the winter season. From 2007, the top, demographically, through 2018, cumulative real GDP growth was 19%. Well, you know, from the top in 1929 through the Great Depression in 1940 by the classic bottom people call, same 11 years, 20% real earnings, GDP growth. We've had a winter season, the lowest growth in U.S. history, now even lower than the 30s, while we have this great bubble in stock that is totally disconnected. I've got my classic spending wave that I've shown for, you know, 30 years now. And basically it worked until 2009, including the top and the downturn and what looked like was going to be the next Great Depression or breakdown of the financial system. And then, well, nope, we'll just print trillions of dollars and offset that. And now it's $16 trillion and rising and tax cuts and all this sort of stuff. So this has created an artificial bubble, which makes it more dangerous. This has, I mean, again, the stock market adjusted for inflation compared to my spending wave, which was the best indicator I've ever had, continues to work around the world, is now the stocks are more than double what they should be, which means they're the most overvalued compared to fundamentals in history. And it's all this stuff like you're saying. It's all speculation, all cheap money. You know that almost all, since 2009 and QE, almost all the net, like over 90% of net buying of stocks has come from corporations buying back their own stock. It has not come from institutional investors who've been selling more than buying. Retail investors have been neutral, and foreign investors have been slightly positive and small. It's all been buybacks funneled by cheap money and this artificial bubble that just like, okay. And so I always tell people recommending the tech stocks for everybody to buy when you ride with them. Now it's the largest corporations are the dumb money. They are buying overvalued stocks at the highest prices in history at the top of the market, using their cash flow to do that, or borrowing, even worse. And then when the things crash, they're going to need that cash flow to survive the shakeout. And then they're going to be saying, where's the money we need? And why aren't you buying our stock now that they're down 70, 80, 90% like they were in the early 30s? So this is going to look like the stupidest thing in history. But right now, looks like the thing to do for corporations. Earnings are growing very slow, so goose your earnings per share by reducing the shares dramatically. And the Fed keeps issuing record debt. How do they float that? How do they afford it? They push interest rates down, and they buy their own bonds to absorb the float. And then corporations turn around and buy their own stocks with cheap money and artificial cash. I mean, this is the craziest thing in history. And that's why it's just been my biggest challenge. I mean, we're very good at measuring and projecting fundamental cycles, including the commodity cycle and things like gold and commodities. But this is now central banks have taken over the free market system and just say, we're just going to grow. And you know how we're growing? We're just growing by speculation. The rich get richer. It's speculation. At least those people who may only be 20% of the economy, or they're 50% of spending, and they keep the economy going and corporations keep going. You know, this is crazy. It's not going to last. But, you know, I've had to adjust my cycles. You know, I've had to really adjust for saying, well, yeah, but this is the reality. Governments are going to push until it blows, and I say it's going to blow not yet, late this year, early next year is my best forecast from all of my cycles and from everything I can see on how things are deteriorating as they keep pumping this bubble up. There's a point where it just blows of its own extreme.
You brought up 1999. I was there. I started to cut my teeth as an analyst. You might say in the middle of the 1999 bubble. I mean, all you had to do was put a .com behind a name. And before you knew it, it tripled in value overnight. But you know, one of the hallmarks of that period was the retail investor came back into the market in a big way. Everywhere you went, somebody had a hot .com pick. I see a nervous retail investor, maybe one of the signs we should watch out for when your cycle peak that you're looking for comes to pass, a return to that almost ebullient, frothy level.
Yeah, there's two things. One thing that's different this time, this is now the third major bubble in a row. That bubble burst, you know, late 90s and early 2000, and more modest bubble, 2007, and then a deeper burst. And now the biggest bubble yet and the most pervasive, and it's going to, I mean, retail investors have been thrown around since basically the late 1990s. The last time it was just one bubble, 29, and burst. And of course, everybody, the longer something goes up, the more Joe Public jumps in. That's why in the late 90s. This time, they are more cautious because people just don't know what to think. And you also see, pretty obvious to anybody with half a brain, this governments are just pumping this up. They are printing it out of thin air, throwing it into this financial system. And now Trump is giving tax rebates to corporations when they have the highest profits as a percentage of GDP in all of history, like they really need this. It's just anything to keep this bubble going because you can't get Homer Simpson to spend more because they have peaked demographically. You can't get spend much more because their wages haven't gone up or they've been down in real terms since 2000. So the only way is just to keep pumping up stocks and financial assets and corporations and keep it going at a level that at least feeds the richest people. And they, of course, spend money on everything from yachts to high-end restaurants, and it keeps the economy going enough. But again, who cares for the stock market? Profits have gone up. Earnings per share have gone up 119% faster than actual corporate earnings because of this stock buyback. That's just total artificial bubble going to burst. And again, I tell people bubbles always burst. I don't care whether it's supply or demand causing it. Australia, I've told them, yes, you've got better demographics than us. You know, all these advantages, but your real estate's the most overvalued in the developed world, and it's out of affordability, and it's going to break from its own. And that's what's happening. Australia, just like 2006, our real estate started to slow down, fall, and get in trouble without a recession 2 years before the stock market peaked and the recession started in early 2006. Well, that's what's happening in Australia. Their real estate is falling since mid-2017. They're going to be in a recession by 2020, and they've got good demographics where we don't. So this is bubbles defeat themselves, but man, this one has been off the charts on how long it can go because it's had so much support from governments. Are do or die on this, and they're just going to do this until they die. Then they're going to look like, and so the corporate managers. I think that these retail investors will jump in more at the end, but, you know, they may never fully because they've already been whacked twice. Retail investors in China got whacked harder on the second bubble than the first one because the government encouraged margin buying in China to help offset the real estate bubble, which they were trying to taper down some. So they encouraged speculation stock. And retail investors in China got slaughtered in the 2015 second bubble burst in China. So I think retail investors have just been beat up and they may never come back fully.
One thing that I'd like to toss into the ring here that I haven't read anywhere, really even in the blogosphere yet, although I'm sure many folks are at least ruminating on the idea, corporate buybacks. Remember, by the way, in the late 90s, that was huge too. I mean, they were floating. You might recall those secondary offerings, they had the IPOs, but then they were just dumping as much of their shares on the market and the market couldn't get enough of it. Well, today, corporations can't get enough of their own shares. The executives go without a salary. These days, their income is highly dependent upon those stock options. So if you have shares that are flying higher, hey, let's bump them up a little more. Starting to sag, well, we'll buy back some shares, decrease float, increase demand, voila, higher prices. The only problem with this magic trick, the free money train sort of left the station as rates moved higher. Now there's talk the Fed might start a rate cycle. I know you're looking for an end of this bubble. What would you say to the hypothesis that if they do drop rates significantly, that decrease the cost of borrowing of our corporations and they could buy even more of their shares back?
Yeah, I think that's why, I mean, I'm just looking at the charts, and I look for the first bubble. One of the things I know about bubbles, and this is very important because that's my only defense for my subscribers, crash, and in the average of the last six major stock bubbles in the last century, 42% crash in the first 2.6 months. The most extreme was 29, late 29, where you saw 40% in 2.3 months. And of course, Bitcoin was 69% in a month and a half, a more extreme bubble. That's the only way you know. So when there starts to be a correction, like in early 2018, I look at that correction and say, does this have the trajectory like 29 or early 2000 where it's going to be a big crash? And no, they didn't. So I had to tell my subscribers like in, you know, March 2018, sorry, that looked like a bubble top, but it's not acting like a bubble top. So it's a correction and same thing in late 2018. So the only way to sense that is when we do finally start to see a correction, does it have that sort of trajectory? The markets look to me like this is the first wave up with two more coming for a five-wave Elliott wave in this final bubble. And this first wave was pretty dramatic and hasn't even corrected yet. After it corrects, we should see another wave at least that strong up, and then another one after that. I mean, I tell you that my targets from a lot of angles, close to 10,000 on the NASDAQ, that's still a lot of upside. So all of this, you get some type of trade deal with China, which isn't going to last, but they need this, and there's some type of hokey trade deal. Okay, the markets love that. They're already expecting that. And maybe the Fed actually, instead of just not raising rates, actually talks about lowering them or lowers them a little bit, or stop selling bonds, all, you know, easing the Fed gives, because they're the only ones that are tightening significantly in the world. Japan's still printing like crazy, and Europe was going to taper, but they've backed off with this slow economy. So if the Fed gets any more accommodative, that's just another reason for this stock market to run. And, you know, in a bubble, the market ignores risk, and there's all types of political and financial risk, just like there were before. The market's going to ignore them, and all it needs is any good news. And so I think this is just part of how the NASDAQ gets to 10,000 in the next several months. And I, by the way, I think Bitcoin, if stocks have another bubble, Bitcoin is a slam dunk to go to new highs. And I'm projecting 32,000 comparing to the early internet bubble, that Bitcoin could be at 32,000 within the next year. So we just get one great bubble. And then, of course, bubbles get extreme and they burst. I mean, because there's a point where the smart money, our measure of the smart money that we get from Bloomberg is already saying the smart money has not been buying the stock market since the early January 2018 peak. It's corporations buying their own stock is still driving this. So this just goes until it blows. And then when it blows, I think, that first 40% plus crash in a few months is going to lose a lot of credibility for this whole bubble, for the central banks and everybody.
Firstly, I agree with your assessment that when this thing implodes, there's not going to be a lot of time to find the exit. Similar to what we saw, you know, about, let's say, 8 months ago with that market swoon. But, you know, you can't help but notice, Harry S. Dent Jr., that we've had quite a comeback from those lows. So the market resiliency, that speaks volumes.
Crack like it's been a bubble market. It hasn't been phased by that correction. And again, the bubble does not get phased until you have a 30 to 50% correction, a 20% correction in late 98 before the last thrust like this. You know, the tech stocks were down 34% instead of just 24% recently, and then they turned around and went up higher than ever. So it takes more than we've seen to now. This market is still thinking we're up. The Fed's got it back. The Fed's going to get more accommodative. We're going to get tied a trade deal. Everything's okay. Trump's pro-business. The stocks are not phased. You're right. This rally says, I want to go up to me.
I'd be remiss if I didn't ask for your thoughts on the precious metals sector. Higher stocks doesn't typically translate into great news for commodities. There's a higher correlation to the U.S. dollar, but the risk on trade doesn't usually work to the benefit of the more safe haven trade. So give us your thoughts. Are you looking for maybe some of the inflationary aspects to spill over?
Yeah, I have changed pretty substantially. First of all, when gold did hit that 1,050 level in late 2015, I said, look, this is oversold. This is due. I mean, this is like a major way down, but it's due for a major bounce. And our target was around 1,400. Well, we've gotten back near there. Gold could still go back and break up to, you know, somewhat above 1,400 or so. But that's kind of the limit I see. Because ultimately, when this thing turns down, it's going to be deflationary again and meltdown, and that's not good for gold. Gold does like inflation, and inflation is a little higher now, and that's one thing that can give gold some buoyancy in the near term. So I wouldn't be surprised to see it go up some higher. But, and I used to say gold could go down more. My bottom line target now for gold, since it has gold and cryptos, I have a bubble model for all of these things, stocks, commodities, real estate now. They've all followed them, upside and downside, where they've gone that far. Gold did not go down as much as it should have. It went up like a bubble. It did not go down as much. Neither did crypto, which is why I still think there's some buoyancy in both here. But ultimately, in a downturn, I think they both go down. I speak at crypto conferences now, and the crypto community is on this four-year. We get a bubble every 4 years. They think it's going to be 50,000 by 2021. I think you get a final quick bubble into late this year, and then crypto goes down 95%, and that's when you know the bubble's over there. And then you get a long-term boom like the internet had. And that same thing, I see gold maybe going up some, but then going down in the crash because of deflation. And then I see a big long-term, probably the best commodity boom in history, including gold, as emerging countries dominate the world. And guess what's gold the most? China and India spend the most money per capita income on gold. And so I think the next commodity boom, which would be from about 2023 to 2039 on my 30-year cycle, we'll see gold go from maybe 700 if it gets that low. It might even hold at 1,000 because it is holding up better than all the other commodities. But that's when gold could go to 4,000 or 5,000 or something. I wouldn't doubt that at all. But I'm neutral on gold near term, bearish the next few years, and then gold would be one of the first things I'd love to buy. We have a global crash of commodity stocks, real estate, everything but high quality bonds. And again, I found this in this crash, especially 2008 and now, that the safe haven really is more the U.S. dollar and the highest quality bonds. And that was also the case in the Great Depression. And gold was harder to measure because they kind of froze it and did all the stuff. But clearly in 2008, when things melted down, the U.S. dollar went up and the highest quality bonds did well. And in the Great Depression, the only thing that long-term treasuries and AAA corporates basically doubled in value dividends in the 30s when everything else went down and took a long time to get back. So that was really that's the safe haven I'm looking for. I'm looking at gold for playing the next long-term commodity rally. And the metals, always gold, not just this, but all metals do better because they are much more limited than agriculture and cattle and sheep and stuff. That's stuff you can always expand. You can't expand the supply of gold and metals nearly as easily. So it'd be a big on gold.
A little more difficult to move a large number of sheep across borders and from town to town, you know. And again, I don't want to draw too many eye rolls from my regular listeners, but clearly we love that 5 to 10% core holding of the precious metals in every portfolio. We never know when there's going to be a Venezuela or Argentina-style event or Central Europe, and there's just been so many others. Even Russia, you know, a couple of years ago saw the price of oil and gold explode in value simply because of currency issues. And I think you kind of alluded to that eventually the end game is a systemic currency implosion. We just have no idea what they're going to do to hold off on that day of reckoning. Final thoughts then on maybe the next 3 months.
Well, I think it's critical. If we're going to have this final bubble on the trajectory it's on right now, we should have a correction here over the next couple of weeks, maybe month or so. And then we should see another strong wave, similar to the one we just saw, into the summer. And that should make new highs, and that would confirm we're into the next, we are in this bubble phase. And again, you should see two more waves up at a minimum. And so I see the earliest peak for this would be in September. That's a 90-year anniversary to 1929 peak, which is my most powerful long-term bubble cycle. And early next year, January next year. So I'm looking for a peak in this final bubble between September at the earliest and January towards the late side. And that's when you get more cautious in that. And again, if I see the NASDAQ get near 10,000, I'm saying we're near the end. If I see Bitcoin 30,000, I say we're near the end. But you're also right about having diversification and a little bit of everything, because this, we are on unprecedented grounds here. This sort of money stimulus, throw the kitchen sink at the economy. Governments have always lowered interest rates and done certain things. We've never seen stimulus like this to fight a natural downturn and a debt deleveraging, and it's got to end bad.
I don't hear too many people even think about the thought of that ultimately currencies, these fiat money currencies, this is going to end badly. And they've done a great job putting that day off. The gold crowd has maybe been a bit early on that theme for quite some time. But, you know, there's another alternative that's not tied the cryptocurrencies. And yes, we had very frothy bubble, but still, I would just point out to folks, if you're going to have 5 or 10% of gold, wouldn't you recommend to have at least 2 or 3% in a broad basket of cryptocurrencies?
Yeah. And even scenarios between me and the crypto guys, I think I'm going to be right, obviously, because I'm looking more objectively. I would have a little bit of money in crypto because it's going to be the fastest moving, whatever happens. But if it does bubble up and we do see substantial new highs later this year, then I would tailor off of that because I think it'd be a big crash. But the opposite, what the crypto people think is that the cryptos will do the best when there is the meltdown. That did not happen in 2008. That didn't happen for gold, and I don't think it's going to happen for cryptos, but it could. But again, so I would have crypto now. And if there was a big bubble, I would lighten up on it and then rebuy if there's a crash. But if cryptos don't bubble up when everything else does, then yeah, the cryptos might be that surprise safe haven as well. And like you say, you're not sure how gold will react depending on what governments do. Some governments may just panic and start buying gold to protect their currencies. But I do remind people of one thing, and this is what the gold people, I think, missed. Just a simple thing. The U.S. dollar did not get hit in the late 2008 at the worst of crisis. It rallied 27%. So currencies were not good, but the U.S. currency ended up being the safe haven simply because they're the best house in a bad neighborhood. Nothing good about our house.
I would point out that there are several states now in our country out west that are accepting Bitcoin, and it's a growing phenomenon, you know, for state taxes, state revenues, things of that nature, just as they're also accepting silver and gold. Just as the introduction of a Bitcoin ETF led to an enormous eruption in popularity, I'm waiting for the moment when a central bank in either Moscow, Beijing, one of these other big central banks, India or Venezuela, you might recall, they've created several of their own cryptos. I'm waiting for the moment when they just say, we have a large gold and silver stockpile. We've also decided to add 1% in Bitcoin. I think at that moment, you could ignite, you might call it a gold rush, into cryptos by the central banks. Your thoughts?
Yeah, no, that's a possibility. I mean, again, it's the most bubbly thing. The crypto bubble is bigger than the internet, but in capitalization, it's not as big. But in the height of the bubble, it's even bigger than the tulip bubble, which was a financial bubble in history. So most extreme, people had no idea what a bubble was, and it just, you know, tulips were worth 1,000 times their value.
There is a competing viewpoint or vantage point. What really happened was most of the other financial markets, they were either created or for the most part by the, what do they call them, the big money lending banks and the investment banks who took their cuts. The early investor took their cut and whatnot. But the cryptos were just float out there. They were just literally put out there in the public. And that this was really one of the first times in maybe 100 years or so where there was a true retail opportunity to get in at the foundational ground level. that maybe hasn't really existed since markets have been around.
There's so much going on here. My thing is that the cryptocurrencies are being used as a currency. They're being used for speculation like they were stock at the time, which they're not. So that's a reality that come to fruition here. I still say they're the last bubble, they're the greatest bubble, and they're the sign of the peaking of this bigger, the biggest bubble in history. They crash with the bubble. Then it becomes the next big thing. My thing at these crypto conferences, I said, what gives cryptocurrencies and blockchain credibility to me is the fact that they've had such a big bubble. The biggest hype bubbles, like Internet in the late 90s, Internet was nothing in the late 90s at that point, these companies. No earnings, no sales in some cases, but they were valued at huge valuations. It's because they see them as the next big thing, just as the last big thing is peaking in a bubble. So you get this kind of weird thing. But it is a sign to me that cryptocurrencies and blockchain is the next big thing. I've been calling it Internet 2.0. It's the next S-curve of kind of financial and technology for the Internet.
I think that should be the takeaway point here. Don't we always have to emphasize, Froth, every time we bring up this topic, we've had quite a lot of air let out of the tires in the last 12 months.
Yeah.
But in the final analysis, I mean, look at Ethereum. It's a remarkable contract, the number two cryptocurrency. It's a brilliant legal contract, crypto assets that tie to it remarkably well. You can embed images, texts, whatever you want, right into the blockchain. And they're doing that, by the way, now with Bitcoin forks and Bitcoin as well. So I think as these use cases become more widely understood, especially by the corporate hierarchy, as well as more creative types, even the younger millennials as they adopt it, because as you say, they're not interested in even paper dollars. They're all about cryptos and instantaneous transactions. As we wrap up here, can you tell folks more, please, about your services and your latest books?
Yeah, my latest book, Zero Hour. You know, you can get that on Amazon. And the best way to keep up with us, we have a free newsletter. You just go to harrydent.com, put in your email, and you're on our free newsletter. We have other newsletters, but this is a way people can get to know us naturally. So that's what I recommend. Go to harrydent.com and just get on our free newsletter.
And lastly, we have a really loyal band of longtime listeners, Aussie listeners, and in that surrounding area. Give us an idea of maybe one or two of your favorite destinations in Australia.
Well, actually, I'm going there next week. I'm doing a tour, six-city tour from Auckland and the five major cities in Australia from the 24th of April through May 2nd. My favorite city always there has been Sydney, but I also love Perth and Brisbane, the Gold Coast up there. I haven't been to Auckland in 30 years, so I'm looking forward to that. I frankly, Chris, if I could live anywhere in the world and was not constrained by family, business, and everything else, I would live in Australia. That would be my choice, and I would vacation in Southeast Asia, love Thailand, Indonesia, and those countries, and I wouldn't have to go halfway around the world and get screwed up with jet lag on time zones if I lived in Australia and vacationed in Southeast Asia. So I love Australia.
Harry Esnett Jr., thanks, and hang in there.
Okay.
The blockchain revolution is transforming the global arena, disrupting every industry in its path. GoldSeek.com is excited to introduce an off-the-chain opportunity in digital gold and silver from our friends at Atmex and Sprott.com. One Gold holds physical gold and silver medals at the Royal Canadian Mint, the first online marketplace to offer secure and convenient buying, selling, and redemption of digital precious metals. One Gold uses Vault Chain, a secure, immutable blockchain ledger developed by TradeWind Markets, the leading innovator in digital precious metals, distributed ledger, and blockchain technology. Vault Chain. Gold and silver are 100% redeemable through One Gold for physical precious metals delivered to customers' doors in any size at competitive prices and low transaction storage costs. As a special offer and for a limited time only, One Gold is offering gold and silver at spot price with no additional premiums. OneGold.com is secure and accessible 24/7 on any device, offering convenient purchases and sales of precious metals. Easy recurring transactions make passive saving and gold dollar cost averaging as easy as a single mouse click.
Vault Chain
offers the best tier pricing on AppMex products, setting the industry standard as a fully backed physical asset with easy redemption in coins, rounds, or bars, offering clients peace of mind and full transparency. Don't get left behind. Remember to bookmark OneGold.com for the safest and most convenient digital precious metals today. Remember, OneGold.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
This is Robert Ian with GoldSeek.com Radio. One of the most powerful words in marketing is free. Free goodies, free extras, free stuff. The perception of getting something for free has an irresistible addiction attached to it. A compulsion to want that thing. Particularly if there's no work involved. And especially if someone, like a political candidate or sitting politician, convinces you it's a right or entitlement that you deserve. The promise of free stuff surrounds us today everywhere we look, listen, or tune in. Free stuff, by its very nature, is debt, in one way, shape, or form. Because eventually, somehow, it needs to get paid for. There's a lot of terms that are thrown around in the media, and by supposedly learned experts that are presented as separate topics, plans, or proposals. But I will suggest they are not all that much different from each other, because at their root, each of these concepts represents some kind of debt, some kind of free stuff that will expand the indebtedness of current and future producers for generations to come. What are some of these topics? Free health care for one. Universal basic income for another. Free college, not to mention college debt forgiveness. Quantitative easing. Stimulus. Medicare for all. And literally dozens of others. Margaret Thatcher famously said, "Socialism is great until you run out of other people's money." These proposals, that quite frighteningly could become mandates, will not only rob other people of their money, they will rob future generations of their productive labor and effort decades before they are even born. There is something inherently evil in that prospect, and in those who would make such proposals. The very concept and definition of what debt represents is in the process of being redefined, rebranded, and reintroduced on a massive scale right in front of our very eyes. Case in point, last week it was announced that Chase Bank was canceling its Canadian credit card, and the market was applauding. If you missed it, this is one of the most significant stories to emerge this year. The headlines read, "Chase Bank forgiving all debt owed by its Canadian credit card customer." It went on to say, "U.S.-based Chase Bank is forgiving all outstanding debt owed by users of its two Canadian credit cards, the Amazon Rewards Visa and the Marriott Rewards Premier Visa." The bank retired both cards last year and said it's wiping out cardholders' debt to complete its exit from the Canadian credit card market. One customer is off the hook for $6,157 still owing on his now defunct Amazon Visa. A 24-year-old university student is being forgiven a $1,300 debt. Chase said it chose the debt forgiveness route so that everyone benefited. They felt it was a, quote, better decision for all parties, particularly their customers. Debt forgiveness can trigger a taxable event in both the U.S. and Canada, so the supposed gift may have additional financial ramifications. Beyond that, this targeted helping of debt forgiveness is a pilot program, a test that will be monitored by politicians, financial experts, and social engineers the world over. How much debt forgiveness is the right amount to induce behavior change? How do people respond or vote as a result? What's the reaction from customers, news media, and independent analysts? If other kinds of debt forgiveness or free stuff is served up to other segments of the population, what strings will come attached to that debt forgiveness? All eyes will be watching the great Chase Bank Canadian experiment into free stuff and its future ramifications. As the very nature of debt is being rebranded, secretly and quietly in plain view, your response is being carefully cataloged and analyzed for clues that will be quantified and used to persuade present and future generations to comply with whatever is asked of them. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.